Balaram, going to Vrindavan. Also a very mysterious pastime. So he was speaking with the gopis. He greeted everyone. But these are just some verses where he's speaking to the gopis. They said, he may forget us, but does he at least remember his family members? Because their separation from Krishna was doubled and redoubled because they saw Balaram. Because Balaram and Krishna are just the same, except that Balaram is a whitish color and Krishna is blackish color. So, very difficult to penetrate into the mysterious moods of the Brijbasis. Because no matter what they say, no matter if they're angry, no matter if they're in crying mood, it is always an ecstatic mood. It is always based on the depths of their love for Krishna. So the gopis, in somewhat of a pathetic way, they asked, does he remember his family members? He may have forgotten us because he left us, even though we had given him everything. He just left us. And when Balaram asked the gopis, according to Vishwanath, he asked them questions that explained some of their answers. Well, why didn't you go with him? And they I can't remember exactly what the answer there. He asked, why didn't you go with him? Balaram says, I'll read the next verse and then. So does he remember his family members? Especially his father and mother, he could forget us because he may be enamored by the city girls, city ladies in Mathura. But how about, does he remember his family members even? Because he left just like that and he didn't return. Especially his father and mother. Do you think he'll ever come back even once to see his mother? Because Mother Yasoda hadn't eaten, hadn't slept, hadn't done anything until as long as Krishna was away. And does mighty old Krishna remember the service we always did for him? Purportia. See, the Vishnu Chakravarti comments that the gopis would render service to Krishna by stringing flower garlands, skillfully using perfumes, and constructing fans, beds, and canopies out of flower petals. So this is in the Vrindavan forest. They would make canopies out of flower petals, and it would be perhaps very warm. And then these cooling canopies of flower petals that were fragrant, just for his pleasure. Fans, and they would fan him in this way, and resting places. And by these simple acts of love, the gopis rendered the greatest service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it was simply out of love, with no desire for anything in return. For Krishna's sake, O descendant of Darsaha, we abandoned our mothers, fathers, brothers, husbands, children, and sisters, even though these family relations are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us and gone away, breaking off all affectionate ties with us. And yet, how could any woman fail to trust his promises? So what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is, he's inserted questions that Balaram may ask to the gopis that would explain the next segment of what they say. So Balaram said, "But most beloved gopis of Krishna, Krishna is full of love for you and always remembers you." Denying this, the gopis replied, "No, we don't have any faith in Krishna's love." Why? Because he rejected us who were solely devoted to him. They expressed this in a verse and a half. The gopis continued, "Though we gave up everything for Krishna, we gave up our brothers, our husbands. He played his flute on the night of the Rasa dance, and we gave up everything for him." The parents, brothers, they tried to stop us. We placed our children down. We didn't even dress ourselves properly. But everything to please Krishna. And then Krishna, he gave up, though we gave up everything for Krishna, he left us immediately and left. He gave us up. So you say that he loves us and he remembers us, because the question was, does he still remember us? And Balaram replies, of course. And their answer is, well, we gave up everything for him. How is it possible that he remembers us and thinks about us? We did so much service to him, and then he just left us, rejected us in a moment. He just walked out and he hasn't come back. Does he at least remember his parents, even his mother? Will he ever come back again? Though we gave up everything for Krishna, he gave us up immediately and left. What a pastime. Because everyone is looking for a God to surrender to, who you can always trust that they're going to be there with you. So externally, they did their part and surrendered fully to Krishna, and then Krishna left them to drown in the ocean of separation. They gave themselves to him so fully, and how did he reciprocate? By leaving. So, from an ordinary point of view, this doesn't seem proper. It doesn't seem correct at all. From an ordinary point of view, or looking at it even from the point of view of the common conception of God, would you surrender to a God who you give everything to him and then he leaves you when you need him most? So one thing we learn is that the gopis, no matter how Krishna deals with them, their dealing with him is fully consistent. They're fully, only, and always completely dedicated to his pleasure, regardless of how he treats them. He may handle them roughly by his embrace, or make them brokenhearted by not being present before them, but still, he is their worshipful Lord unconditionally. And because of their unconditional love, it is so powerful. It is so direct, unfailing. Because we're thinking about how Krishna should act. Krishna should act in such a way that he's unfailing, he's always there when we need him. But how Krishna acts is his business, because he is the transcendental autocrat, the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead. So instead of being concerned about how Krishna acts, we should be concerned about how we act. So we want Krishna to be unswerving in his dedication to us, but it's our business really to be unswerving in our dedication to him. And then how he acts is mysterious. It is not according to our expectations, but it will increase the devotee's love and ecstasies. And this is how he treated the gopis. So Vishwanath continues. Balaram said, "Well, why didn't you do something to prevent him from going away? Well, why didn't you go with him?" Gopis say, Krishna just tore our bonds of love to shreds like a blade of grass and left. Therefore, tell us, what should we have done? And Balaram replies, so he just left. This was intolerable. This was inconceivable to the Brijbasis, because they didn't know anything but Krishna. And then Krishna, in one day, Akura came one day and he left the next morning. He came in the afternoon, and then the next morning Krishna was gone. They didn't have time to prepare themselves, to put up a defense or anything, prepare their minds. Didn't have time. He didn't talk to them again. But then what he did, so Balaram replies, since you are maintaining your lives without him, you also must have broken your ties of love for him. And in one sense, this is a key. The gopis reply, not at all. By his words, I will return to you. Iti delivered by a messenger. After Krishna left, he sent the messenger back, said, I will come back. I'm returning. I will return. By these words, repeatedly sent through messengers, so he sent it again and again, Krishna retied the fetters of love. What does fetters mean?
Fetters. Shackles.
Yes, but not quite as heavy as shackles, but I think like ropes, something, no?
I don't know.
It's like chains, but not as fetters. It's not as heavy as chains. It'd be interesting to look it up. Do you have your dictionary in your pocket? Why not see exactly what fetters means? Of course, this is just the English word. No, he didn't bind them with cheese, Mataji. It might not be chains. It may be chains, but it wasn't with cheese. Krishna retied the fetters of love even after they were broken. Again, he took hold of our life airs as they were about to leave us and reestablish them by saying, I'm coming. I'm coming back. Then Balaram said, well, if you believe Krishna will return, if that's what's keeping you alive and you actually accept that, then why are you so disturbed? Gopis, no, this is not correct. Since even till now Krishna has not come back, we've concluded that whatever he said was false. Balaram, why did you believe what he said in the first place? Gopis, how could unintelligent, straightforward women like us not believe his words? So this is Vishwanath's explanation of the words of the gopis here, and how and what points connect the different sentence parts to them. And fetters means?
A chain or manacle used to restrain a prisoner, typically placed around the ankles and laid bound with fetters of iron.
Heavy.
Seems that it comes from the Dutch word vette, meaning a lace, and from an Indo-European root shared by foot. So foot fetter.
Oh. Yeah. So the shackles, what did they compare the shackles to? What were the shackles?
Restraining hand and feet.
And that is the
promise. His promise that I'm returning. So that gave them the hope. That gave them the hope. And that again strengthened their love. The hope kept them alive. So for Krishna's sake, O descendant of Dasa, we abandon our mothers, fathers, brothers, husbands, children, and sisters, even though these family relations are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us and gone away, breaking off all affectionate ties with us. And yet, how could any woman fail to trust his promises? How can intelligent city women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady and who is so ungrateful. So these are the loving exchanges that the gopis are making. They must believe him though, because he said, how could they pass it? We're unintelligent, just village girls. We're simple and straightforward. Yeah, the gopis are simple and straightforward. But that's a, who, how could I be telling a lie? I'm so simple and straightforward. So, but the city girls, why would they believe this Krishna and what he says? And then they said, because they're not so foolish as we are. He believes someone whose heart is so unsteady, jumping from one to the other, and who is so ungrateful. But they must believe him, because he speaks so wonderfully, and also because his beautiful smiling glances arouse their lust. So they're saying, of course, they're going to completely fall under the sway of Krishna, his glances, his words. Vishwanath's comment. Some gopis speak the first two lines of this verse. Furthermore, we women of the forest are unintelligent, but how can the intelligent city women believe Krishna's words? Other gopis reply in the second two lines, though Krishna speaks lies, it still sounds very wonderful and enjoyable when those words come from his mouth. Not being able to give up the taste of those talks, the queens will continue to listen. There is still another reason. They are disturbed by the moods which arise and grow to prominence when they are struck by Krishna's smiling glance. And then another gopi said, this is so mysterious. It is so different from the concept of God, the Ishwara, the controller. So different from the concept of the Supreme Lord. This appears as if a conversation about someone who's been rejected by love. They're angry and they're at the same time still attached and attracted. And it sounds quite average, mundane. But the mundane is the reflection of the highest spiritual, and what is the highest on the spiritual platform is the lowest on the material platform. And what one really sees, if one can see nothing else in this, other than their heart's emotions are erupting in love, especially when they see Balaram, because Balaram brings, he's so familiar with them, and they're in madness of love. And when they think of Balaram, when you think of Balaram, you say Krishna Balaram. So they think of Krishna, they're thinking of Krishna doubles and triples and quadruples when they see Balaram. So their ecstasy, the depth, the intensity of their missing Krishna is increasing. And it is completely fixed. It is completely fixed on Krishna. So then they say, why bother talking about him, dear gopis? Please talk about something else, even if he passes his days without us. Then we shall similarly pass hours without him. Other gopis, agitated by love and the mood of jealousy, they're in man, they're angry. They address the other gopis who have already spoken. They say, time passes for both Krishna and us. But the difference is that he passes his time happily without us, because he has others. But we pass our time miserably. We are also different from other women. If other women are together with their lovers, they live. And if they are separated, they die. But we neither live nor die. This is the fate Providence has written on our foreheads. Alas, what remedy can we find? Now, while speaking these words, the young cowherd girls remembered Lord Sauri's laughter, his pleasing conversations with them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces. They were practically speaking, associating with him through the depth of their love for him, through their remembrances, and thus they began to cry. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the gopis thought, after piercing our hearts with the 5 arrows of his sweet smiles, his sweet talks, his enticing glances, his graceful gait, and his loving embraces, the Krishna moon disappeared from us. So how will the city women not die when he does the same to them? Overwhelmed with these thoughts, the distressed young gopis started crying right in front of Balaram. So this was the extent that their ecstasy was increasing. There's the different levels of prema. And when it comes to the level of sneha, I can't remember the level right now, but when it increases to the level past man, then there's no shyness anymore. So they speak their minds. And then it increases further. So then the ecstasy increases, and they, even in front of Balaram, we spoke the other day about how this is on one level inappropriate, how deep their feelings are that they're speaking like this in front of Balaram, who's the elder brother who has Vatsalya Bhav in relationship to Krishna. So Balaram, the attractor of all, Sankarsan, Balaram is called Sankarsan, Taha Krishnasya, being expert at various kinds of conciliation, consoled the gopis by relaying to them the confidential messages Lord Krishna had sent with them. So Krishna sent, when he left, he sent messengers saying, I will come. And then when Uddhava came, Krishna sent many, many messages. And when Balaram came, he also sent messages. These messages deeply touched the gopis' hearts. Vishnu says, it should be understood that Krishna dispatched Baladev and Uddhav with his intimate messages. Krishnasya Sandesh. Because they were both his trusted friends, without consideration of their other sentiments of servitude in the case of Uddhav and parental love, Vatsalya Bhav in the case of Baladev. The use of the plural form of Sandesh, Sandeshar, indicates that Krishna sent many messages, not just one. Some messages instructed the gopis in transcendental knowledge, like those messages come out or expressed by Uddhav. Some were sweet, some were apologetic, some were dignified, and being heartfelt, Hridayam Gamai, Krishna's messages cannot be revealed publicly because of their confidential nature. Balaram boldly exclaimed, dear gopis, now that I have consoled you, I will go to Dwarka and bring Krishna here by force. I am not exclusively under Krishna's control like Uddhav. In this way, Balaram displayed his expertise in conciliation. So in the next part, so that's the end of Balaram's first part of Balaram's entry. Then the next part, he has his own pastimes with his own gopis that are described in the different parts of the Bhagavatam during the 34th chapter. When the Sankarsuda was killed. Oh no! We need an 11th canto. There it is. 11:12. Let's see if it's in here. No, it isn't. Does anyone know where there's an 11:12?
Okay, right.
Huh? All these thoughts on 13. So these pastimes of the human-like pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very mysterious. Let's see what Prabhupada describes this. So what we've been hearing is up to this point, we heard about Rukmis being killed, and then we heard about Usa, Aniruddha, then the killing of Banasura, and then King Riga, and now it's moved back to Braja, and even more difficult to understand.
Three times, King Riga, not Nirga.
Yes.
Riga, the silent N.
A silent N?
N? Isn't that how you spell his name? N.
R. Did I say, what did I say?
You said Riga. Prabhupada, or someone I heard recently was saying Riga. Amala Bhaktadas says Riga.
Oh, just Riga?
Yes.
Well, it's probably somewhere between, because the Western tongue doesn't. You're saying it's just Riga, with no Riga.
We were saying Nirga.
Nirga.
How do you say it?
Nirga.
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 Nirga. Nirga. Nirga.
Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga.
Nirga. Nirga. Nirga.
Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. Nirga. And then quite amazing.
Uddhava?
Huh?
Is it Uddhava and the Gopis?
What?
Yeah, and there's some verses in chapter 12 about Uddhava and the Gopis.
Yes.
Chapter 12.
Because it has.
The last chapter.
Just not this. Because Krishna in the beginning of the chapter, actually, at the end of the chapter, of the previous chapter 11, Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life." So he's speaking on a very, we're hearing from Krishna's own mouth, this Uddhava Gita. And he's speaking about himself in a way that that others, we hear others usually speaking about him. He says, "I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly persons. And thus, if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes, one possesses no effective means for escaping from material existence." The power of devotional service coming in the association of devotees. "My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, Yadu Nandana, because you are my servant, well-wisher and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I speak these great mysteries to you." So Krishna also tells Arjuna that I will speak the most confidential knowledge. But the level that of the confidential knowledge that he's going to speak here is still higher. So this is what Krishna says. That was the end of the 11th chapter. Because the question is, what is Krishna, we're hearing how it is from the gopis' point of view. How their hearts are are tortured by their love for Krishna and Krishna's absence from their vision. And we hear from the acharyas that this is the highest forms of ecstasy, really the highest forms of ecstasy. And Krishna, by his dealings with them, has evoked these highest forms of ecstasy, even though from our point of view, we don't really have much access to them. But we can understand that their situation is evoked by Krishna. So, but what is Krishna's feelings towards them? We've heard about the steadiness and the fixedness of their love for him, and regardless of how he plays with them, how he deals with them, they're completely focused on him. But what is he thinking? How does he feel about them? They're saying, oh, he has rejected us, and well, he's forgotten about us, and we should forget about him, but we can't. We're miserable without his association. Well, he's happy. But this is what Krishna says. He's talking about the most confidential secret, he says. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, my dear Uddhav, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotees. One may perform the Astanga Yoga system, engage in philosophical analysis of the elements of material nature, practice nonviolence and other ordinary principles of piety, chant the Vedas, perform sacrifices, penances, take to the renounced order of life, execute sacrificial performances and dig wells, plant trees and perform other public welfare activities, give in charity, carry out severe vows, worship the demigods, chant confidential mantras, visit holy places, or accept major and minor disciplinary injunctions. But even by performing such activities, one does not bring me under his control. In every yuga, many living entities and tags, so he's glorifying the association of devotees here. In every yuga, many living entities entangled in the modes of passion, ignorance, gain the association of my devotees. Thus, such living entities, the daityas, rakshasas, birds, beasts, gandharvas, apsaras, nagas, siddhas, charanas, guyakas, vidyadharas, as well as many such lower class human beings, were able to achieve my supreme abode. Vrichasura, Prahlad Maharaj, and others like them also achieved my abode by associating with my devotees, as did personalities such as Brisaparva, Bali Maharaj, Banasura, Maya, Bibhisan, Sugriv, Hanuman, Jambavan, Gajendra, Jatayu, Tuladhara, Dharma, Vyadha, Kubja, the gopis in Vrindavan, and the wives of the brahmanas who were performing sacrifice. The persons I have mentioned did not undergo serious study of the Vedic literature, nor did they worship great saintly persons, nor did they execute severe vows or austerities. Simply by associating with me and my devotees, they achieved me. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the gopis, cows, unmoving creatures such as the twin Arjuna trees, animals, living entities with stunted consciousness such as bushes and thickets, and snakes such as Kaliya, all achieved the perfection of life by unalloyed love for me, and thus very easily achieved me. Even though one engages with great endeavor in the mystic yoga system, philosophical speculation, charity vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifices, teaching of the Vedic mantras to others, personal study of the Vedas, or the renounced order of life, still one cannot achieve me. The residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akura brought my brother Balaram and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress because of separation from me, and they could not find any other source of happiness. Dear Uddhav, all of those nights that the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved, in the land of Vrindavan seem for to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt that those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma. So this is Yugayutam Namishena. My dear Uddhav, just as the great sages in yogic trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merge into the ocean, and are thus not aware of material names and forms, similarly the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies, or of this world, or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. All those hundreds and thousands of gopis, understanding me to be their most charming lover, and ardently desiring me in that way, were unaware of my actual position. Yet, by intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So they were completely, continuously, and only associating with Krishna. Therefore, my dear Uddhav, abandon the Vedic mantras as well as the procedures of supplementary Vedic literature and their positive and negative injunctions. Disregard that which has been heard, that which is to be heard. Simply take shelter of me alone, for I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, situated within the hearts of all conditioned souls. Take shelter of me wholeheartedly, and by my grace, be free from fear in all circumstances. So what is Krishna saying here? He's saying that the methodology of becoming free from material existence is to have one's consciousness absorbed in me. And the methodology of being absorbed in me of the Braja Gopis is the most complete methodology because it was full love. So they knew nothing but Krishna. They were ardently desiring me as their most charming lover. They completely didn't understand what Krishna's position as the Supreme Absolute Truth was. But the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. So this is the teachings, actually, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the example that he gave, following in the mood of Srimati Radharani in the residence of Vrindavan and the Braja Gopis. He was fully and only absorbed like this. Could not think of his body, could not think of the world, not aware of material names and forms, nor even of their future lives. Just complete absorption in the loving mood of their relationship with Krishna. And it was, in these cases, this was the mood of separation. And this is what we're seeing with the Braja Gopis over here. So this is how to see it, that at this time they're not even aware who Krishna is, of his position, even though that doesn't lessen who Krishna is or what his position is. The consciousness, nothing but Krishna with great love in a specific mood fills their consciousness. They're not aware of their bodies, they're not aware of their minds, they're not aware of the world, they're not thinking of their future lives, they're just simply fully focused on Krishna. So let me just read the verses where Balaram is conversing with the gopis again. And if you could see, because what it, say a great yogi, what does a great yogi do? He withdraws his consciousness through first through practicing the eight different steps, niyam, niyam, the rules and regulations. Then the asana is gaining full control of the body, which leads to, and to gain full control of the body. I don't know if you've ever seen one of these really expert yogis go through their routines. They have complete control over their body. It's actually shocking and astounding what they can do. And to be able to control your body like that, you have to be able to control your mind. Because what you're doing actually when you're controlling your body is bringing your consciousness into every part of your body. This is the system. It's not just exercising, but you're removing ignorance in the sense of you move your consciousness to every part of your body. So every part of your body is acting in the exact way you want it to act. And to do that, you have to be in full control of your mind. And that full control of your mind is perfected through the pranayama, after the asana is the pranayama. And then it begins to focus with dharana, and then meditation. And then pratyahara, withdrawing it from this world, until finally dharana dhyana, meditation, and finally samadhi. A full focus of the consciousness upon the Supreme Lord in the heart. Just a full absorption, the whole process of Astanga Yoga, of these meditational yogis, leads to this full absorption of the consciousness on the beautiful form of Krishna. So listen to the gopis' words again from the point of view of understanding that they are actually the topmost yogis, because not only they're fully absorbed, the consciousness is fully absorbed on Krishna with nothing else. There's no possibility. Like yogis, if something happens to upset their routine or something, it's very difficult for them to focus their consciousness. If some material desire pops up in their mind, which it tends to do, very difficult to have any kind of a focus. But the brother gopis, it doesn't make a difference what's going on in the world or outside of the world. They don't have any consciousness of anything. So here's their words. Look at it from that point of view. Having long suffered the anxiety of separation, the cowherd men and women and wives, the cowherd men and their wives embraced Lord Balaram. The Lord then offered respects to his parents, then joyfully greeted him with prayers. And then he turned to the brother gopis. They smiled. And Balaram recognized their smile, if you remember correctly, as their madness in ecstatic remembrance of Krishna due to Balaram's presence. And they said, "Does he remember his family members, especially his father and mother? Do you think he will ever come back even once to see his mother? And does mighty armed Krishna remember the services we always did for him? For Krishna's sake, O descendant of Darsaha, we abandon our mothers, fathers, brothers, husbands, children, and sisters, even though these family relations are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us, and he's gone away, breaking off all his affectionate ties with us. And yet how could any woman fail to trust his promises? How can intelligent city women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady, who is so ungrateful? They must believe him. They must believe him because he speaks so wonderfully, and also because his beautiful smiling glances arouse their lust. But why bother talking about him, dear gopis? Please talk of something else. If he passes his time without us, then we shall similarly pass ours without him." While speaking these words, the young cowherd women remembered Lord Saori, Krishna's laughter, his pleasing conversations. With them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces, thus overwhelmed with these thoughts, the cowherd girls began to cry, even in the presence of Baladeva. Just a complete, full absorption in the samadhi, ecstatic thought of Krishna. And Balaram then brought out the messages from Krishna, and he consoled them. So in the samadhi of the gopis, there's so much variety, there's so much moods, therefore bhakti rasa is considered an ocean, bhakti rasa, an ocean of amrita, of deathless nectar. And on the ocean, the different moods of the one who has rasa, who has a fully blossomed ecstatic relationship with Krishna, it's like waves on the ocean, because the ocean is never completely steady. Sometimes it's a little steady, then something happens and it comes up, and there are small waves that build up the Vyabhachari Bhavas that support the bigger waves, and the Satvika Bhavas, the eight ecstatic symptoms, are like huge waves that stun the person. So the gopis were experiencing these moods, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in his later days, described in the last six chapters, other than the final chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, his madnesses, his bodily transformations, his feelings of separation, his inconceivable behavior, his body, because of the internal ecstasies that were the waves of ecstasies, Mahaprabhu's body, sometimes the joints would separate by 6 inches. Sometimes his body would become elongated. Sometimes all the limbs would become, in these different ecstasies, they would withdraw inside his body, and he would become like a pumpkin. And he would rub his face against the walls and just cry. And dear Sukhdamadhan Ramananda Roy would sing songs and verses that would complement his moods. In this way, Mahaprabhu was experiencing the separation felt by Srimati Radharani from beloved Krishna, dearest beloved Krishna. And Mahaprabhu exhibited this, especially in his last years. So this is a very mysterious chapter, because on one level it just sounds exceedingly ordinary. And so many of the chapters that we've read, on one level, just there's not very much exhibition of Krishna's Aishwarya, of his unlimited powers. There's just different activities, him dealing with his family members. Of course, he touches the lizard, and the lizard turns into a demigod, and he fights with Vanasura's armies, and his Narayandwara defeats the Shivadwara. But the underpinning is these are that he's protecting his the grandson Aniruddha of the Yadava dynasty. But here, in this chapter, it's even more so. That it appears to be unextraordinary. There's no Aishwarya except right at the end, Balaram's going to show some. So that's what Krishna said. That he said two exceptional things, or many exceptional things, in those verses that we read from the 11th canto. But one was that this kind of love places me fully under the control of the beloved. It's so powerful, it's so focused, because it is full of transcendental ecstatic love, while the mood of the yogis, which is basically just a focus on the form of the Lord, and it's very neutral, shantarasa, with no service. But just a fully ecstatic, glorious meditation on the form of the Lord doesn't place Krishna fully under the control. But this type of yoga, bhakti yoga, full ecstatic, transcendental, emotional love, on, especially on the Sringaras level, places Krishna fully under control, under the control of the gopis. So very, very most mysterious chapter. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities in Rath Yatra about this. And today is the Gundicha Marjanam, isn't it? Yeah, so what is the connection between that and this? So on the metaphorical level, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes how the cleansing of the Gundicha temple it's the cleansing of the heart of all the anartis, so that all the unwanted things, so that the transcendental can descend into the heart. Because unless the heart is cleansed of matter, the spiritual will not descend. The dham, first the heart has to be cleansed, then the sandini shakti by the mercy of Balaram has to descend, and then Krishna, and then when one's heart is pure and completely spiritualized and suitable, then one invites Krishna to come and live in the heart. That's what the purport of the Gundicha Marjanam. So that's the heart has to be cleansed, so that's what's supposed to happen by our chanting of Krishna's names in a proper way, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, by the processes of Krishna consciousness, by the service. And that's the second point, that this very much happens. Even if one is lacking in some of the disciplines, everything can occur. Krishna himself said, by the association of the devotees. Okay.
Where
does he say that? I just read it. In the beginning, he said this is the most confidential, and that's the beginning of the 12th chapter. Okay, any questions?
Well, we say that the gopis' love places Krishna fully under their control, yet he didn't come back. He's simultaneously
That's one way to look at it. That's but he couldn't leave. He never leaves Vrindavan. And Vishwanath also explains it in a few other ways, that he does come back on the uppercut, takes up his residence on the uppercut level, and they're always associating with him on that level, and that's the part we don't see. That one see in this, with this type of ecstatic attachment and separation from him, there's a channel opened up to the upper cut level where one is actually associating with him continuously. Because the so-called unmanifest level just means unmanifest on this level. So how does one get to the spiritual dimension? Of course, it doesn't exactly work with the gopis who are always on the spiritual dimension. But the spiritual dimension, the channel is love and separation. And then one actually experiences that Krishna fully, and one's there with Krishna. So it's obviously mysterious. But Krishna, he doesn't leave Vrindavan. He like splits the level. So he's with them on this level, and he's not with them on that level. But his not being with them on that level, the lower, not the, it's not lower because it's Vrindavan, causes them, their consciousness to be on the uppercut level, so he's always with them on all the levels. So of course this is not possible for us to understand it. and that's one's on that level of consciousness. But there are, you know, there are stories of how of the penetration of Srinivasacharya and Ramachandra Kaviraj, wasn't it, into the to assist in Krishna's pastimes, and then we see always that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rescued from the sea, he journeys to the upper cut level and he deals with Krishna and takes part in the pastimes, and then he comes back and why have you brought me back, and he's going for that, and we see in some of the prayers of Raghunath Das Goswami that there's three different levels of his consciousness. He's here, he's half here, and he's all there. He's half here, half there, and he's all there. So Rupa Goswami, the same thing. But they're also teaching us how to penetrate. And the penetrational factor is it's the force of love. It's not done by one's willpower. It's not done by one's
control.
It takes tatra lolam ap mula mekalam. It takes intense desire, and as long as we have all the anartas in our heart, our desires are always insipid, weak, because we're split between. You know, part of our consciousness is moving upward, but our wanting to be upward, but we're anchored so much by our material desires. We want to be there with Krishna, but we also want a completely comfortable life here. And then, while the gopis, on the other hand, the highest exemplars, they did not care about their body. They did not care about the world. They did not care about anything. And of course, we don't imitate these things. But yet, this is the highest standard that's given.
What is the
name? Sorry. Something.
Sorry?
It's okay.
Is that the name? Hari, sorry? Is that
the name? Same. That Sauri means something to do with Krishna. They're calling him by not a Vrindavan name of Krishna, but it's the name of Krishna in the Yadav dynasty. I can't remember exactly what it means. And I don't think that one will be in the dictionary either. Not in this dictionary, anyway.
Bhujan, how do we get free from all these desires
and two desires that we anchored by? Just don't perform devotional service to get free from that. Just try to please Krishna. Just try your best. Just try your best and become humble, pray. Serve the devotees. Just want to hear about Krishna.
It seems like when you hear about how, when you see the contrast, you see how bound up you are, like Chaitanya was saying, then it's really easy to start wanting sort of liberation. I mean,
want to get out from the shackles, from the fetters of the material energy, so you can serve.
So that's the step that makes it beyond seeking liberation, is if you want to get out.
Yeah. Because what liberation is a small part. Just like if you're in prison and you want to. You miss your beloved family, so you're thinking of getting out of prison, but you're not just thinking of getting out of prison. You want to be with your family, and so you're thinking about your family. But part of that, to get out of, to be with your family, means that you have to be out of prison.
It's a small concomitant part. I mean, it's just like you walk out the door and that's already done. But then
so it's a matter of what's emphasized in the consciousness.
by the hearing.
So the gopis don't. That's the gopis don't think about their future births, because
they
just, huh?
They don't think about the world.
They don't think about the future, their bodies, their future births, the world. They don't think about it. They're just thinking about Krishna. In a particular mood, the mood of the gopis. So this is, of course, the most exalted consciousness.
Prabhupada says that there you are the service, and it's only because you re-identify in our body that we can understand it. It's quite an amazing.
Explain it again. You are the service, meaning?
You're here through a series of things that there, he was talking about the difference between there and here, and he went on and said, you are these things, they're absolute, and the absolute plane, you are the surface. And the only problem is, now you identify with your body, so you think, I am my body. And I do the service.
Mm.
But there's no conception of bodily identification.
Because here we're having to detract the false conception in order to serve. And that's not the case there.
That's not there.
Yeah.
So there's something that's really overwhelming for us that just doesn't exist there.
But on the other side, there's something that's completely overwhelming for them. And that's
here.
That's love for Krishna.
Yeah.
They're overwhelmed by their relationship with Krishna because he's so attractive.
Yeah. And to us, he's not so attractive. What's so attractive is the things around us that we've got an involvement in.
And their consciousness is only involved in him.
Mm. They didn't see the world.
They just see him. And that Ishta Deva Spurti, and even when the Mahabhagavat sees the world, he sees Krishna in the world only. Nadeki Toram Muti.
And everything here that's sort of obstacles for us is like a drop of water.
They have to try so hard at everything.
I guess in this version of Chakravarti Thakur also says that at the stage of prema bhakti, just like now, we try and engage our mind in spiritual hearing and concentration, and we don't recognize when it just drifts away, it just constantly drifts away. At the stage of prema bhakti, we're so much absorbed in Krishna in the same way as we can experience now, and you sort of have to really make an effort to concentrate on the things of this world, because you just, as much as we're absorbed in here now, we'd be absorbed the opposite way.
Mahaprabhu, was it say that he would just perform his duties, the eating, the sleeping, etc., bathing, just mechanically, the body would just be going on out of the habit of the body, born of the body.
Yeah.
As an example, but he, his mind was elsewhere.
Yeah, it's sort of like if water is liquid, but if you only know ice, how do you understand water is liquid?
By
a process of.
That was one of the points there, is that we're associating one way or another with those who are very liquidy.
Yeah.
What was the first verse that you read from the 11th canto? There's something that there's no other way. I said, wasn't the first decision to work to work? There's no other way. And if you ain't no ice, there's no other way than finding somebody who knows good.
But the interesting thing is that ice is water, and it has the potential to again become liquid.
Mm.
But if you only know ice, you don't know water is liquid.
But is it possible, you think, to only know ice?
Feels that way. So
no, but you know, so there must be some water somewhere. You can write, there must be.
Mm.
I mean, but everyone intuits that there must be something. I guess there are people so absorbed, those like animals, they only know matter, and they have no thought, intuition, desire, or anything else. Yeah, and then they leave the body.
Yeah. Prabhupada would always compliment animals, you know, rascals and animals. The other day he was talking about something and he, again, it's like he linked it up and it was that verse, you know, the one about, yes, and he said, so this verse is from Shastra and they're here and they're cows and animals, asses. So when he turned in this Western word that he would use all the time, especially one that would, you know, felt and made people feel a bit offended, like rascals and animals. He was taking that term directly from the Shastra verse of some sort.
Also, Abhijanati Imam Buddha.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Rascals.
Donkeys, asses.
So it wasn't like as if he was just out of the goodness of his heart, using these uncritical terms.